thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
I enjoyed Sunlit Man for its exploration of Skybreaker, which was really cool. Here, I'm still looking for more. I'm still trying to get into, you know, what are Skybreaker oaths? What are they out here trying to do? What is it like to be a Skybreaker? We've talked before about how Nail skews your understanding of what Skybreakers are. So what I'm looking for here, as we get more interaction like with Heispren directly, is are the Heispren teaching Skybreakers something different than what Nail is teaching them, or is it the same? Here in this like two lines that we get from this Heispren, it seems like it's the same. Stop getting distracted by silly things. You must adhere to the law. That could be something that came straight out of Nail's mouth. So this Heispren is definitely, yeah, not giving up a lot of information, won't even tell him his name, and definitely seems very keyed into the law.
Welcome back to Following No One on Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 233, and we are in chapters 17 through 20, which I'd just like to pause there real quick. If you've been following along with us and you've been looking at our chapter schedule release in our Discord, and some I've mentioned it a couple episodes ago, we've already deviated from it just a little bit. So take whatever I post with a grain of salt. If the next week posts with one more chapter or one fewer chapter, I apologize. There are a lot of different factors that go into that, but I will do my best to keep it as accurate as possible. With that said, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm glad you mentioned that, Trevor. I will say, I think we're usually always as planned, but we just real time now. Today is January 3rd. At the time of recording this, and we're just kind of getting back into things after the holidays and things. So I think that's why we ended up tweaking some things around. So yeah, but I'm doing great. Really excited to talk about these chapters this week, particularly Zeth. I'll get into it. I'll get into him more, but he's my boy.
Ellie, how are you?
I'm doing great. And, As Trevor's brother, I do give you, listener, permission that if Trevor's chapter splits throws off your reading, you can jump into our Discord and throw some Rotten Tomato emojis at him in our Discord. Please do so. I would find it hilarious.
Hold on. I will no longer be doing our chapter splits. It'll be Tim who's doing our chapter splits. So go throw your Rotten Tomatoes at Tim.
That's right. No, you still got like 10 chapters of responsibility left, and then Rotten Tomatoes can turn towards Tim.
You're correct. I have three more weeks of responsibility, and then it goes to Tim. All right. Do either of you have two words to summarize the events in this chapter before we get to a summary from Elliot?
I have my two words. My two words are loopholes and emotions. I think historically I used to try to come up with really sneaky words that maybe had a convoluted meaning I had to explain, but this one's pretty direct. Loopholes, I feel like we're going to be talking about contracts and contract loopholes for the coming weeks. I feel like it's my prediction. We talk a little bit about potential gaps in the contract here for the Contest of Champions, and emotions largely ties into some of the things I want to talk about in Zeth's chapter. He's notably being pushed to suppress emotions, and we'll talk about it more later, but loopholes and emotions.
So the two words that I have are myopic and prescient. And these
can
are
a definition
kinda,
for those.
I will.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I can. I'm going to use it to describe some chapters of Wind and Truth for you. These ones are a little convoluted. They get into it, but myopic in particular, I zeroed in on for Zeth. So myopic means short-sighted. It means not thinking about the future and only what's directly in front of you. Generally, I think it's used in a rather negative sense. I couldn't get past the sense of, so chapter 19, we get back into Zeth POV. He is so, I forgot how like intense and in the moment Zeth is. Like he's so intense. Everything is just so intense. And
I thought I got rid of the voices, but I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the shadow crept. Yeah. And on and on and on. Great stuff. Great stuff. Don't get me wrong. But Zeth, the character, is like not thinking long-term at all. And I'm really curious to see if this is going to be a thing with him. Is this part of Zeth? He cannot look past like the next 5 minutes. I'm curious about it. We'll talk more when we get there. And then to foil that, to contrast against that, we then go immediately to chapter 22, like an entire 8-page long chapter about strategy and long-term planning and Dalinar Navani, like analyzing every little thing. If we do this, we do this, we do that. They've got their Herdazian general, the Mink there. They've got Wit. Like everyone's pouring into this incredibly long-term planning, which I try to capture with the word prescient, which is more like long-term thinking. It's what's relevant now based on the long-term picture of where we want to get. Like a prescient data fact would be something that is relevant now because of what's coming in the future. So very opposite thought approaches between Zeth and our more strategic heroes. With all of that said, let me go ahead and jump into a summary of the chapters for you guys in case it's been a little while since you've read them. We're covering chapters 17, 18, 19, and 20 for today. And I kind of talked about 19 and 20 already. I'll hit him again in a second. But 17 starts way back with Adolin trying to head to the discussion of the generals. And he bumps into Yonagon on the elevator. And they have a little elevator chat on the way up to the meeting. We pop in with Shallan and her little spy group. Gaz gets some interesting scenes here with Shallan and Gaz. We then get into the actual scene with everybody in the big planning room in chapter 18. Wit has his big revelation. He kind of reveals to everybody, Odium is no longer Raze. Odium is somebody else. We don't know. This throws a whole wrench in the plan. Problems, problems, problems. 19 is the Zeth chapter that I talked about. We're in Zeth's point of view. He's super intense and emo and all the other things. And Kaladin and Zeth get to Shinovar, and Kaladin's all, you know, mind blown by the dandelion that doesn't retreat back into its shell because that's what he's used to. And then jumping back in chapter 22, the strategy session, we spend the entirety of chapter 20 of just picking apart the strategy. What is Odium doing? What do we need to do? We need to send these troops here, defend this city, back you up. Wait, you're going to leave my city exposed. All the kind of politics and, you know, big picture. How do we fight this war through chapter 20? Oh, and then at the very end of 20, which I definitely hope we have time to talk about this again, Adolin and Dalinar really go at it at the end of chapter 20. Adolin's kind of been stewing on this bitterness now for a while, and he starts to let loose on Dalinar. So we'll definitely have to talk about that to close all this out.
Yes, I was going to highlight that if you didn't. However, Paul, I'm going to throw you a bone. Congratulations. We are going to talk about Zeth first. So feel free to chat. We get our first Zeth point of view, what, since Oathbringer Interludes? Zeth, it is in theory Zeth's book, right? And we get our first Zeth point of view. Take it away.
Okay. Wow. Thank you, Trevor. I've never gotten to get what I want on this podcast, Trevor. I'm kidding.
So true.
I'm excited to talk about it. So I'll just go ahead and set the scenes for. I'll go ahead and talk about my word. My word. I talked about emotions, and I talked about it in reference to Zeth. So Zeth and Kaladin are flying to Shinovar. And this is right when they reach the edge of Shinovar. If you look on your map, it's called, and they reference it in the books, it's the Misted Mountains, is that range of mountains that's kind of what keeps.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yes.
There's some factoid in my head that's a direct reference to the Misty Mountains in The Lord of the Rings. I don't know where I got that information from, and I don't know if that's true, but I'm fairly certain that Sanderson titled them the Misted Mountains as a direct reference to like The Hobbit. But
I think you're right. Either we've talked about this a long time ago on the podcast, like whenever we were first looking at the map of Roshar. Because that always, I every time I say the Misted Mountains, it makes me chuckle a bit, because I'm like, that's so much the Misty Mountains on Middle Earth. So I think that's pretty direct. If it's not direct, then it's very, it's getting a little dangerously close.
Yeah. The Wheel of Time does it too. You start the story in the Mountains of Mist. Like, I feel like everybody out there is shouting out the Tolkien's Misty Mountains.
Yeah, precisely. So they're coming up to the edge of the Misty Mountains. Like the first, like once the landscape starts to change from what we think of as dry, like, you know, more barren desert-ish landscape to a more lush green biome that we're familiar with on Earth. They talk about grass and chickens and all sorts of things. Which is really fun as us as the reader to see that, I think. But whenever they get close, Kaladin and Zeth are flying in, and they get close, and he can see, and they go down and land on the ground here. And Zeth is a bit overwhelmed with emotions. He hasn't been to Shinovar since he was named Truthless and was sent off and had his whole escapade with his Oathstone, and doing lots of killing, which he did not want to do, and all sorts of things, right? He hasn't been to Shinovar since then. He's wanted to come back ever since he knows he's not Truthless. He also, you could tell from the writing and, you know, from the emotions that he sincerely missed Shinovar, missed the landscape, misses his homeland, I suppose. And he's really overcome, and he, I thought that was neat to see, I guess, that he like, it says he, like, dropped to the ground and was a bit overwhelmed. Then he very quickly is told by his Spren, who it specifically mentions in this chapter, would not tell him, the Spren has not told Zeth the Spren's name yet. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but the Spren says, basically, what are you doing? You need to have a better hold of your emotions. You can't behave like this. And that made me so sad, because I was hoping that we'd finally have a voice in Zeth's head to help him out.
Someone's got to be abusing Zeth at some point. It's the universal constant.
Zeth is constantly being abused. You're right. Whether it's the Oathstone, Nightblood has surprisingly been the best voice that he's heard, which is quite a poor bar. If Nightblood is your, like, well, at least you're not too mean to me, thing. So I'm very curious about this. I'm curious if this might become a reveal that we'll see that this is auxiliary. I think we've bounced around that theory at one point, or at least we talked about it at Dragonsteel. Someone had the theory of auxiliary from Sunlit Man is Zeth's Spren. We have no idea. But either way, the Spren is kind of holding Zeth at a arm's length, it seems like. And it's a different bond relationship than I feel like we've seen with any of our other Radiants. I'm curious to know, do y'all have any thoughts on specifically that? Like, Zeth and his High Spren, the bond there. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
As a Skybreaker myself, I'm always keying in on these moments, and I enjoyed Sunlit Man for its exploration of Skybreaker, which was really cool. Here, I'm still looking for more. I'm still trying to get into, you know, what what are Skybreaker oaths? What are they out here trying to do? What is it like to be a Skybreaker? We've talked before about how Nail skews your understanding of what Skybreakers are. So what I'm looking for here as we get more interaction like with Heisbren directly is, are the Heisbren teaching Skybreakers something different than what Nail is teaching them, or is it the same? Here in this like two lines that we get from this Heisbren, it seems like it's the same. The Heisbren is like, stop getting distracted by silly things. You must adhere to the law. That could be something that came straight out of Nail's mouth. So this Heisbren is definitely, yeah, not giving up a lot of information, won't even tell him his name, and definitely seems very keyed into the law, which is Nail's whole thing.
Well, what would Zeth do if somebody wasn't in his ear abusing him left and right? I mean, there's no other path for Zeth, to be honest. So part of me wonders if the Heisbren is treating him this way because that's how Zeth expects to be treated, or if this is actually a Heisbren thing, because we know that the whole perception of the Spren is what the Spren is. So I wonder if the, like, very clearly in these two lines of dialogue, we can already see this is an abusive relationship between a Heisbren and Zeth. But I wonder if that's not really the Heisbren's fault, if that's Zeth expecting, but this is just how contracts go. This is how relationships are. And so that's how the Heisbren's going to act because that's how Zeth views the world. So I'm actually really curious if this progresses or if this is like an act of abuse from the Heisbren's point of view and we have to get rid of this Heisbren.
That's a good point. I really hope that we get to see through Zeth's journey here, him start to like make decisions for himself. Because it feels like his entire journey, this is kind of what I was trying to get at with my myopic word, is he's so focused on like, what am I being told to do? Do that. He's so caught in this, I must have a master, I must serve a master. And not that like service in and of itself is a bad thing. It can absolutely be a good thing of serve the cause, sacrifice your own wants and desires. I'm all for it. But Zeth has taken it so far that he like doesn't even make decisions for himself, like ever. I would love for the big Zeth moment to be Zeth finally tries to figure out what the right thing for him to do based on his own judgment, not what someone is telling him.
Zeth wore white because he chose to, and he killed a king because he chose to.
Or does something because he chose to. Like, even the opening of this chapter plays into the wears white thing. He's like, and Zeth is still wearing white. He's still acting this way because that's how it's always been.
Because nobody's told me otherwise.
Yeah. It's like, dude, do something because you think it's what you need to do. That's where I hope we get to.
I couldn't agree more. As we've gone through this chapter, and to add on what y'all were saying with this relationship with his Heisbren, Trevor, I like what you said. I hadn't considered that of maybe the bond that he has with his friend is that way because that's how he expects to be communicated to. That's how he thinks. It's the most rigid law over everything. Even the one thing I did not like in this chapter, just because it kind of made me cringe, was I think Zeth talks to Kaladin at one point and is like, why would you say this or whatever? I don't even remember what Kaladin says.
Oh, he calls him a coward.
That's right.
I actually have a comment on that, but finish your thought.
Yeah, he Zeth is too direct and too literal that he can't even function as like a person, you know. I'm hoping that that's what we will see through his development in this book. We'll see him with Kaladin and other things. I'm hoping we will get to that point. And like you said, Elliot, that he will make decisions for himself. My prediction for how Zeth's story will end in this book is that he's going to end with that. I think he's either going to sever the tie intentionally with his Heisbren, or maybe the relationship with his Heisbren will change. But he's going to end in some way where I think the last words we're going to see about Zeth, maybe. There might be a little almost pseudo epilogue thing, but I think we're going to see that basically that things were quiet, that he didn't have a voice
in his head.
Well, maybe because he's dead, but something will happen. I think he's going to choose, and because he makes a comment, this is what really led me to it. In this chapter, he makes a comment that he wonders what would life be like if you didn't have a voice in your head, essentially, like if you didn't have someone barking orders, etc. And it made me think that I think that's going to be the completion of his story. I think he's going to choose, maybe not correctly to do something, but he's going to choose, I'm going to figure it out on my own. I'm going to do that. And there's all sorts of things that can happen. He might die as just the crazy combatant warrior. He might, you know, whatever. I also wanted to point it out, I forgot this detail. But you remember after his soul was kind of stapled back on by Nail, he has like an after image as he walks around. I'd forgotten about that. And I'm just like, man, the imagery of Zeth is one of the things that so much draws me to him. I think it's so, so cool. So all that being said, there's a lot here. Trevor, what were you thinking?
Okay, so two different things. One about the coward thing, which you'll have to remind me that I'm going to talk about because I'll forget. Second thing is the voices. On my reread of Oathbringer, it really stuck out to me how much voices is a thing for Dalinar. Dalinar cannot get out of his head the Rift and Evie and everybody he's killed in the past. He goes, he's an alcoholic, like wildly abusive alcoholic, has to go to cultivation to get it cured from him. And then when his memories come back, the voices come back until he swears his third ideal. I don't remember where Dalinar is. Until he says, I am unity. I accept responsibility for what I've done. You cannot have my pain, etc., etc. So, I just really wanted to highlight the significance of Zeth hearing voices still. Zeth is approaching his fourth ideal, headed to Shinnevar to cleanse Shinnevar. That's his fourth ideal mission quest thing that Skybreakers do on their fourth. He's still hearing voices. And Dalinar purged his on his third ideal. So I just wanted to kind of highlight the parallels of that. Of Zeth is very much not healed or past this, even though his Spren bond is quite fully in progression. So either his Spren is not like allowing him to heal, which has some interesting ideas if you want to stew on that for a while, or there's different rules for Skybreakers. Maybe they can't heal themselves the way like bondsmiths and edge dancers and stuff can. I don't know. There's a couple different ways you can go with that. Secondly, the coward thing. This was brought up in the Discord on the early chapters. And I actually wanted to bring this up again because it's a very interesting idea. Zeth kind of offhanded calls him a coward. But literally two paragraphs before that, he's talking about how he shouldn't underestimate Kaladin. He has earned his reputation. Kaladin's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. And then calls him a coward because he doesn't fight anymore. There was a discussion that was, what if this is like a cultural language thing where to fight is one of the lowest things in Zeth's in Shinnevar. Like, if you're cursed to go fight, that's a bad thing. Whereas in Alethi culture, if you're a warrior, that's the highest, one of the highest callings, right? So saying you're a coward, you no longer fight, it may not be like a slap in the face to Kaladin, like to Kaladin, that's how it feels, and he gets all offended about it, right? Like, hey, you shouldn't say things like that. I'm on my journey, you know, whatever he says. And Zeth's like, well, why shouldn't I? I'm just stating fact that you no longer fight. I think it's more of a cultural thing of Zeth acknowledging, oh, you're no longer fighting, you're achieving other things. And Kaladin taking offense at that because he's a Lethi and saying, hey, I can still fight if I want to. Like, don't, you know, that type of thing. What do you think?
I think you make a good point. I think it's like a 50-50 split. I think it's partly cultural because this line and the delivery and the way you're talking about it makes me think a little bit of Rock, of just the way he talks as like a horn eater, the way he speaks Alethi and things. He has a different cadence and he says things differently that might be a little faux pas with Alethi that he talks to, but not bad. I think Zeth is more extreme, and so I think it's maybe a bit of that cultural difference as well as just how rigid, and he's just gotten to a point of it's like, you know, there's a sentiment in life of to care for someone, you have to love them and be truthful. And if you have only truth without any love, then it's kind of lost. And if you only love them, but you're not truthful with people, then you're also kind of withholding from them. And I think Zeth is so far on the truth side of, I'm only going to tell you the rigid, factual truth of what I think. And it's too far. So I think there is a bit of cultural things there of him perhaps a misunderstanding or a little bit of a barrier there. But I think definitely the point that's coming across that I anticipate what was intended to come across here is that Zeth is so rigid on the truth without love for his, for other people in life. Right. Yeah, I figure that's the case. This makes me, well, that scene was a bit uncomfortable. I'm very curious to see the development. Like we said, this is allegedly Zeth's book. I personally am really hoping that, like, it's kind of obvious that this becomes Zeth's book. Not maybe in the same way, you know, our earlier books get to really showcase a character. We have a lot bigger things at stake this book, and maybe less the forefront for Zeth. But he's a character that we've seen since the prologue of The Way of Kings. And I think it would be very, very remiss to not fully flesh out the opportunity that we have with this character. So I feel like I want to look back on this chapter and say, no, that scene wasn't cringy. It was a benchmark that we get to look at the progression that maybe Zeth has had throughout over the next several days. And see an upward trajectory. I have been so long on this, like, Zeth redemption, becoming a normal functioning person ever since the beginning. But at least something, I'd say. Yeah. I'm just hoping Zeth doesn't completely go off the rails and ends up being a good positive force or some kind of redeeming situation. Call me hopeful if you want, but
I think what we can look for, what I'm going to be on the lookout for Zeth, for that development that you're talking about, Paul, like, where does he go from here? Can he think for himself? And can he think in complex ways? I think right now, when I read this scene, I read it as Zeth is just over literal. He's so extremely literal. That's that line where he calls him a coward. It comes immediately following Kaladin, like, not stepping on the dandelion. he's like trying to get it to flinch. He's like kicking at it. But then Zeth in his mind says, oh, look at this guy. He calls himself a warrior and he can't even step on a plant. And then the very next line is what he speaks out loud, which is calling him a coward. I wonder if that's just Zeth's brain is so very literal that he just goes, oh, you can't step on a plant. You chose to lay down your spear. Well, therefore, you must be a coward. And like, that's just 1 + 1 = 2 for Zeth. And part of maybe the development that he needs to have is to be able to consider multiple things at once. Like to get to the point where he can understand that, hey, maybe setting down the weapon or choosing not to do the thing is the more valiant choice or the more courageous choice or something like that. That seems to maybe not compute for Zeth right now. Maybe that's kind of the what we could look for as him making developmental steps.
Anything else on Zeth, Paul?
I was going to say, I'll try not to take up our entire episode's time with Zeth.
On our but shortest chapter.
Yes, yes, precisely. But I just want to reiterate two things. One, that I think it was really well, it was very impactful to me to see the point of view from Zeth here and see the emotional strain he's under, I'd say. As well as the other thing I want to say is we haven't actually gotten a Zeth flashback yet. When are those supposed to start? I'm really excited for Zeth flashbacks. We haven't gotten any yet. I'm hoping we get several. So,
alrighty. I want to talk about some of our side characters first in these other chapters, and then we'll talk about like the meeting, the big monarch meeting that they have through chapter 17 and 18 and 20. Between last episode and this episode, I mentioned this last week a little bit. I want to highlight that how much time we're devoting in these first 2 days to smaller characters, to Bridge Four, to Shallan's unseen court crew. They're so edgy. And, you know, Yonagon and Queen Fen, Felt, these tertiary characters. I think that's really cool to stop and spend time on Gaz and Red and Shab, I think his name is, because I had this thought last night when I was listening to this. I don't know when the next time we're going to talk to these characters is. Once things kick off and we really don't have time in this book to stop and talk to Gaz and Queen Fen and, you know, these other characters, when's the next time these characters are going to talk? The answer might be never. Like, with the time jump and introducing some other characters in the Stormlight Back Five, this might be the last time we ever talk to these characters. So I think it's actually really cool that we have so much to do in this book, but we're still, especially with Bridge Four on day one and then the Unseen Court here on day two, that we're stopping and really giving at least 2 or 3 pages to some of these characters that we may never see again.
It's almost like the journey there might be just as important as the destination that we get to.
Almost like that, yeah. Gaz has maybe the most notable of these. Gaz and Yonagon, I think, have the two primary ones in this episode. And Gaz has a ongoing gambling addiction that we've known about but hasn't really been talked about throughout all of Stormlight. And we've talked about him before. He keeps coming up. Like, I feel like we should have gotten rid of this guy way back in like Words of Radiance, but he's still here and he's still chatting. And Shallan and Gaz have a heart-to-heart about Gaz's gambling addiction. Shallan asks him, you know, how negative are you this week? And Gaz says, oh, zero, actually. And Shallan says, oh, that's good. You did a good job gambling. And Gaz says, well, no, it's because I didn't gamble at all. And then Shallan's like, oh, that's so great. Like, you're accepting the love of your comrades and stuff, and that's healing you. And Gaz's like, no, absolutely not. Nobody will let me in to gamble. And I wanted to highlight this because there's actually more there than on first glance. Because during this conversation, both Gaz and Shallan are light-weaved as someone else. Gaz is not giving himself enough credit here. If Gaz wanted to, he could gamble as somebody else. He could light-weave. He could go disguise himself as somebody else and go gamble. Gaz is getting over this. He's just not accepting the fact that he is, because nobody will, you know, let him in, or the other light weavers went and beat up all the gambling rings to not let Gaz gamble. That's not a good excuse for Gaz. Gaz has the magic ability to go be someone else and gamble if he wanted to. He is actually getting better, whether he admits it or not. I just wanted to highlight that.
But it's Gaz, of course, so he can't admit that he's getting better, so he has to be facetious about it.
Correct.
Go
ahead, Ed.
Just one note on Gaz. I do think full-on, like, Gaz redemption arc incoming. Not only is he a good guy nowadays, he's full-on one of Shallan's lieutenants. I worry when this starts to happen, because character turns to the light side is often followed by character dies.
Shout out to Elokar.
Like, that's a Elokar is the hugest example of that. Although Elokar was kind of a hero to start with, but like, no, the guy who has a redemption arc, but then like you're getting excited about it, you're all on board, and then, oh no, they have to like sacrifice himself for the hero, get you emotionally invested, and then have a big emotional moment. That's very much a thing. And I feel like Brand has done that to us before. Elokar may be the biggest. Yeah. Tough. I'm now very worried. I'm now very worried that Gaz will not survive the end of this book. We're going to see him turn back to maybe better ways, and his odds of making it just plummeted.
I will say, the odds of him surviving also plummeted. I am not worried about it at all. I don't care about Gaz.
It is Gaz. Sorry, Gaz.
I was going to say I'm not super attached to Gaz, so if things happen, things happen. But yeah, I've simply just been surprised that he's still around. When you move on from Gaz in The Way of Kings, you're kind of like, okay, well, Kaladin and crew have made it on. They're no longer, you know, with Gaz, under Gaz. And you kind of move on. And then he shows up randomly on this boat in the next book. And then he kind of just pokes his nose about. He's just always there, I feel like. And I've never fully understood why he's always there. I'm hoping this gives a good answer as to why he's always there, maybe.
The other small chat is Yonagon, and we talked about him a little bit last episode. I want to talk about him more this episode. I really enjoyed this Adolin point of view with Yonagon. I think that is a very interesting dynamic between two young, like, royalty guys who don't really want the seat that they're in, but they're in it anyway, and then they react very differently. So we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but Adolin has had his whole side quest in Shadesmar and a year prior to that to stew on Dalinar killed my mom. And he's let it, he says the word fester three times in three chapters. And it's really, really interesting to get to one, bring that back up as a plot point. I've wanted to dive into that more, and I'm glad that we will be and are. But watching Yonagon from Adolin's perspective is a really cool concept that I had no desire for before this. I'm really, really glad that Dalinar, I'm really, really glad that Brandon Sanderson is spending the time to explore these small quirks of his characters, even though we have so much to do in this book. I said that last episode, but I still want to highlight that an Adolin point of view about Yawningon was not on anyone's bingo board, but I'm really glad it's here.
And Yawningon has been a little bit of a dark horse for me. Just to tack on to what you were saying, Trevor, I mentioned this last week with the not awake or not asleep chapter. I've been surprised, but very pleasantly surprised by Yawningon's presence in this book.
This scene feeds us into, and Trevor, you started talking about it there, some of the internal struggle that Adolin is dealing with. And I honestly thought we were going to get into this stuff a long time ago. Like, we ended Oathbringer. I probably talked about in our Oathbringer wrap-up episode how pivotal it was going to be that Adolin now has to deal with the consequence of learning that his father killed his mother. And then it doesn't come up at all, not once, maybe once, throughout all of Rhythm of War.
Once.
It's like mentioned.
Just quick, in Rhythm of War, Adolin and Shallan are about to head off into Shadesmar, and Dalinar's like, good luck, son. And Adolin's like, thanks, Dad. Don't want to talk to you. Bye. And that's it.
And there's a year time jump there as well. So we've got a year and all of Rhythm of War where Adolin has not dealt with this. That's long enough to where I had dismissed it. I thought, man, what a bummer. We could have explored that. Not going to happen. Apparently, let's move on. And so then to now make that like the most important part of Adolin's character development here in Wind and Truth is catching me very off guard. I kind of accepted the fact we weren't going to. So I'm now very relieved that we're kind of going back and revisiting this. And I wasn't ready for it because I thought that because we didn't get a last book, we weren't going to get it at all. So here we are now getting it here in Wind of Truth, which I'm very glad we're going to get into this because I think this is huge for both Dalinar's character and Adolin's character, both. How do they deal with this?
I do wonder, though, one of these characters is not surviving, maybe both. And by the end of this episode, Adolin's like leaving to go to, he just got back and now he's leaving again. They may not actually get into this. There's this whole standoff on you guys should really talk about this, and then they don't. They almost talk about it like four times, and then they don't.
That's true.
And then he's leaving. So they may not actually get into this. I would be very disappointed if they don't, though, because I think it should happen. It's been mentioned like four times in one chapter. It should happen.
Well, so there's a theory here. There's a theory here that I can't quite formulate, but maybe someone can help me. Brandon is very good at pairing pivotal moments with pivotal character developments. We've clearly just set that up for Adolin and Dalinar. Adolin is struggling with it. They have this huge, pretty vicious spat here at the end of chapter 20. I'm thinking like, you know, Kaladin and Shallan resolve some things when they both get chucked into a chasm and have to fight their way out together. What is going to happen over the course of this book that's going to put Adolin and Dalinar in a position where they have to trust each other and work through this? I can't quite flesh a theory out around that, but there's something. There's something there.
I completely agree with you. I could totally see a I forgive you, Dad. I'll take your place as the champion or something. Or Dalinar's about to die and I'll come in and save you because I do finally forgive you. Like I could see something like that happening.
Yes.
Trevor, you were definitely right of like they bring it up and I'm like, okay, go ahead and flesh it out. Like go ahead and talk it through, get through things, get it over with now.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's where we pick up. I will say last episode, I didn't mention this. I was very thrilled last episode that I think we end one chapter with and Cultivation walked up or whatever it was, and it was Cultivation. And then the next chapter, I was like, oh no, we're never going to see Cultivation again. Like, it's going to be left there for like five chapters. But then it started right away. I don't think that we will have the same thing here, but I'm really hoping for some resolution sooner.
The day is not over yet, right? We still got a little bit of time.
I think we have like another eight chapters in this day, to be honest.
Oh yeah, so they can meet up again. Trevor's messing with us again, Paul. He's all like, oh, they're never gonna talk again, and like three chapters from now, it's gonna be where it is.
That's you make a great point.
They're gonna have a knockdown, drag out fight in chapter 25, and then they'll be done.
If I'm allowed to put my personal opinion on this podcast, which that's a joke because I've been doing that for coming up on 5 years and a couple months. I really hope that them getting past things or Adolin like forgiving Dalinar, personally, I hope that's not saved until the end of the book. I don't have much else to back that up on. I hope they work through things soon. And maybe Adolin still, you know, struggles with it a bit. But I want them to get at least to a working standard and be able to move forward. I kind of don't want Adolin is super harsh and cold towards Dalinar. And then at the Contest of Champions, Dalinar's against the ropes about to die, and Adolin's now like, I forgive you, or whatever. I'm like, you know, Adolin's been pretty stand-up throughout our story, which may be surprising whenever you read, like, the beginning of the Way of Kings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I kind of hope we get some resolution sooner. Day two, day three, day four, around there.
All right, that takes us to the grand plot of these chapters. We have mapped it all out over like a lot of words, and they discuss it and they discuss it and they discuss it, and here's how they end up. There are three battles about to happen, one in Aesir, one in the Shattered Plains, and one on Thalen Fields. I feel like we've already done this. We've already fought on Thalen Fields. We've already fought on the Shattered Plains. And now we're going to go to Aesir 2, and now we're doing all three at once. And just a real quick recap, Adolin is headed to Aesir with a small skeleton force to wait for the Aesir troops, which are like 40,000 strong, 5 days away, I think? 4 days away? Something like that. Jasnah is headed with the bulk of the traditional Alethi troops to Thalen Fields to fight Thalen Fields episode 2. Sigzil is on the way to the Shattered Plains with the majority of the Windrunners and Edge Dancers and the Stone Lords are going to Thalen Field. Is it just the Windrunners?
I think it's mainly just, I think the Edge Dancers and the Stone Wards are already with the forces that are going to eventually, that are like retreating back to
Aesir. Yeah. Okay. So
they're already deployed.
The Windrunners are going to the Shattered Plains. Which one do we want to talk about first?
I'll be honest. Chapter 18 and 20, both the whole kind of scene together, it was very interesting. And yet, also rather boring at the same time. And this is coming from someone who very much, I fully appreciate the slow chapters. I am fine with slow. As long as we've got some action, some fun, you know, exciting there, give me slow analysis. I'm all about that. Some of you guys out there listening to this podcast are probably like, yeah, it's the slow analysis guy. Like, there's segments of the podcast that I have to fast forward through, that kind of thing. And yet, this chapter, it dragged for me. 20. It was like, come on, guys, get there already. I fully understand that this kind of thing takes a lot of discussion and analysis, but this kind of struck me as a thing of Brandon of 20 years ago, this chapter would have hit the cutting room floor real fast. Hmm. And yet here it is in there kind of drug out. I appreciate what's going on here, but it definitely felt really strung out. Like, you Trevor, you summarized it all. For me, like, that's it. That's where we got to in this chapter. You're asking for more thoughts on it. I don't know that I really have any, because that's all there is.
My thoughts are more metagame than like plot. I'm looking at our three main characters on these three separate battlefields, Adolin, Sigsel, and Jasnah. I think one of those, let me say it this way. Two of those are way more plot armor safe than the other one, in my opinion. Sigsel can, by definition, cannot die on that battlefield. Jasnah, I'm almost 100% sure, is not dying in this book. Adolin was just sent with the skeleton force crew to hold off against greater numbers. What I'm getting at here is, I think Adolin's in big trouble. I think they had to spell it out in so many words to put Adolin in big trouble without the coalition really realizing how much trouble Adolin's in.
We needed a lot of reasons why Adolin's kind of getting left out on his own with no backup.
We needed a reason why Adolin's about to fight three fused without Windrunner support.
Yeah. Is Adolin just going to get like captured? Is that where this is going to go? Like, Azir gets overrun. Adolin's the only named character we have there, and he just like becomes a prisoner, like a hostage.
Is there a hostage exchange before the contest, and then Dalinar has to be the Odium champion?
I've been thinking a lot of the same thoughts, and I was really racking my brain out of, is Adolin being sent to his death, or is he going to become an immortalized hero from this? I think those are your only two options.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think that's it. Either he does not come back, or he survives through, you know, miraculous means. The characters at this meeting do point out that Adolin is effectively the greatest straight up swordsman, like dueler
in the world.
Yes, in the world. However, I'm like, you know, if you think about it versus a Zeth or a Kaladin who can fly, I feel that's a bit different. Do you think he's going to go and, you know, right before the battle, he's going to swear his ideal or something, and then...
I would be extremely surprised if Adolin swears an ideal in this book. Extremely surprised.
I think the only way I see Adolin swearing an ideal in this book is at the end of the book to, like, pick up something that was... Like, if Dalinar dies, somehow bonding the Stormfather and moving on in that way, I don't see him just becoming a Windrunner or something of that nature.
How do you feel about Adolin taking up the Vessel of Honor?
I could be for that.
I'd be fine with
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yeah.
If Adolin swears an ideal, it'll be in the form of, like, a promise to Maia. It won't be like a traditional ideal. It'll be like a healing of Maia.
Yeah.
Because think about, we've talked before, and I ran into people at Dragonsteel that shared the sentiment. Adolin, his character is unique and special because he doesn't have superpowers.
Right.
And a lot of people like really want him to stay that. What if he just skips all of that and goes straight to Shard? Would that be like an acceptable progression for Adolin? You know, I agree with you. I feel like Adolin just swearing an oath and becoming a run of the mill Knights Radiant, which by the way is a crazy thing to say, given like how far we've gone, right? You know, tell that to a person who's like seven chapters into Wave Kings. Anyway, skip all that. Yes, all those would feel like not super momentous steps for Adolin. What if he goes all the way to the top? What if Adolin is so honorable that he can maybe even supersede what his father is doing and go all the way in building a connection to that shard and being able to embody honor? Could that be Adolin? Maybe.
We get Adolin, Lyft, Renarin, triple shard by the end of the book.
Oh boy.
You left out, wait, but Trevor, if you have your fourth one, I think we talked about Relaine being a Don Smith at some point. So throw Relaine in there as well.
The coalition now knows that Odium is not Raze. They do not know that Taravangian is Odium. They should know that information, if you ask me, but they don't. And somebody should have told them that, but they don't. And so now the question is, who finds out first? Who finds out first? Do they peek into the spiritual realm and see Taravangian, and they're like, oh no. Or are our heroes going to find out at like different times, or is it going to be like a big reveal for everybody? What do you guys think?
I think we find out when Todium appears to Dalinar on day 9 to gloat / mess with things right before the Contest of Champions, and that we do not even find out until then. And then day 10 is like everybody running around screaming, trying to figure out what's going on, because we just learned that Taravangian is Odium, and now we think that he's going to manipulate things and conquer the whole world.
I have one quarrel with what you said there. Taravangian would never gloat, Elliot.
Well,
Raze would gloat. Taravangian would not. Taravangian would show up on day 9 and talk with Dalinar about philosophy.
No, here's what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. We're going to get more interludes with Odium. So we're going to see this progression. The logic that is Taravangian is going to erode. He's going to be sucked into the emotion that is Odium. Like we saw a little bit of that happen in that interlude, right? Where Taravangian is like, no, I am not Odium. I am not going to become this. I am Taravangian. I think that's going to come up again. And ultimately Taravangian is going to lose that battle. And Taravangian is going to become much more Raze-like than he currently is, and will stoop to the level of like gloating. And that's going to be like that moment where we go, oh man, Taravangian has fallen to the hatred and emotion that is Odium. So agree with everything you just said. I think we're going to see progression. I think Todium is going to change. He will gloat, and that will be the big reveal. That's my guess.
I have one thing to add to that, Elliot. I really like your prediction. So I think last episode I asked y'all, when do we think Dalinar is going to find out that Taravangian is Odium? You know what would be really wild that I think would be really entertaining to go through? What if Taravangian, for a time, is kind of successful at his goal? You mentioned that, Elliot, if he's trying to resist the Shard of Odium... He said, I'm Taravangian, not Odium, essentially. What if he does that and has a vision or appears to Dalinar? Dalinar knows he's Taravangian. They talk philosophy, like Trevor was saying. They talk, whatever, try to figure something out. But then he loses that battle, but that battle with the Shard of Odium between that time. Like, he still has his alternating intellect per day. What if the next day, totally different, he is more raised, like more crazed, and that's contest day or something, like that Dalinar gets to talk with and knows Taravangian is Odium, but it's a totally different Odium that shows up on day 10. I feel like either way, it's a separate prediction, is I think on day 10 I think we're gonna get a glimpse at Odium's perspective, and it's going to be an extreme emotion day, I bet, for Taravangian, one way or the other. I don't know which side we'll be on, if we'll be on pure emotion or on pure intellect, or however that spectrum went, but I feel like we're going to have an extreme day. I feel like it's going to line up perfectly and be a perfect storm.
I agree with you. I wonder if Taravangian still knows or not, if he's affected by it, or if cultivation, if that's like a knife in the back that she can twist whenever she wants. I wonder if cultivation can like control it, which is an interesting idea. But Elliot, in the outline here, just kind of wrapping up, you say Wit is communicating with Frost with a white bone, which actually is not true. Wit is communicating with Frost's sister with a white bone.
Yes. Because Frost won't talk to him.
He's not allowed to touch the genie in the bottle, as we discussed way back in like the Wave Kings. Yes, Wit is talking to Frost's sister about the contract, and he's holding up a white bone, and he's like, Navani's trying to ask him, you know, how are you communicating? And he just holds up a white bone as if that explains everything. What questions do you have?
That. Yeah. We've read the whole Cosmere, right? Like, when these little drops come and it goes, ooh, magic system from another world, I'm supposed to get these things. And I don't think I know what this is. Am I supposed to know what this is? Paul, do you know what this is? I don't know what this is.
I might have to default to Trevor on this one.
That is okay. I've had to default to other people for this one. You don't know what this is. I don't know what this is. And apparently this is a mechanic in Dragonsteel Prime, which came out earlier this year, which we do not know about yet. So there is some uncanon mechanic of dragons talking to dragons, which leads to Elliot's previous theory of last week, talking through like each other's bones or something like that. I don't know. I don't know anything about it, but apparently it's some mechanic in Dragonsteel Prime that was previously uncanon and apparently is now, with this chapter, like, okay, that is now a thing in the Cosmere.
Okay. And Dragonsteel Prime itself is not canon.
Correct. Dragonsteel Prime is on my shelf there. It's still in the shrink wrap. I've not touched it at all. I don't know anything about it. But apparently it's in there.
But people who have read it are basically pointing to this scene and saying, hey, I know what I think that could be because I've read Dragonsteel Prime, and here it is in a canon book. Therefore, it's probably going to get explained to us in like Dragonsteel Actual in the future.
Correct.
Got it.
Hope that helped.
It does. I feel better.
You're not supposed to know what this is, and we probably won't know about this for a long time. So, there you go.
Understood.
Anything else?
I think that covers it for me. There's a lot packed in these chapters. I'm excited to see where we're going here. There's only so many days left in the end of this book, and I think you said it earlier, Trevor, a lot of things have to happen in the next week. So, yeah, let's go see what happens.
You're very right. Once again, I'm excited. I'm excited to come back next week. Excited for every new chapter I get to read of this book.
All right, let's reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Let's read and find out.
Toodles.
I think you've overused toodles lately, Paul.
Nuh-uh.